Hello and welcome to the Master of Demon Gorge podcast. Today we're talking about General Hao Bocun. As you probably know, on January 13th of this year, Taiwan held its most recent presidential and legislative elections. But some of us also had another January 13th on the mind. I remember January 13th, 1988, like it was yesterday, even though I was, of course, very young at the time. In fact, I was in first grade. It was a cold, gray, and damp winter's day, as winter often is in Taipei, an image of depression. I went to school that morning, then for the first time in my life, as far as I can remember, I saw adults weep. I saw my teachers weep uncontrollably, like they were terrified. Because they were. The announcement had come over the school's PA system. I believe it was the principal who spoke and informed the whole school. The president had died. The entire school, all the teachers and pupils, were to stand and observe a moment of silence. That was when I saw my teachers weep. The president who died was Jiang Jingguo, son of Chiang Kai-shek, and to this day, according to public opinion polls, regarded as the best president ever in the history of Taiwan. But today's story is not about him. Today's story is about another person who played a significant part on that cold and damp January 13th, even though I was not aware of it at the time as a six-year-old. Today's story is about Hao Bocun. Hao Bocun was born in 1919 in the province of Jiangsu, the same province my maternal grandfather was from. His father had studied for the civil service exams under the Qing dynasty, only to see the exam system abolished right as he was ready to take them. So he lived out his life on the family farm, raising kids. And he particularly had high hopes for his son, Hao Bocun, sending him to school starting at the age of six. In 1935, when he was 16, Hao Bocun signed up at the Central Military Academy, commonly known by the location of its main campus, Huangpu. The same way, of course, that the U.S. Military Academy is commonly known as West Point. 2 years later, in 1937, of course, Japan launched its full-scale invasion of China. In January 1938, Hao Bocun and his cohort of cadets graduated early so as to be able to join the war effort. He was still only 19 years old and was now an artillery officer. 9 months later, Hao Bocun was wounded at the Battle of Guangzhou, but he recovered. He then participated in numerous battles throughout 1939 and 1940, gradually rising up the ranks. In the autumn of 1942, now a captain, Hao Bocun joined the Chinese expedition to Burma. This was a mission that my grandfather was also supposed to go on. In fact, only because my grandfather had been assigned to the mission was he able to get a first date with my grandmother, who pitied the young man going off on what was thought of at the time as a suicide mission. In the end, my grandfather was reassigned, so he never went. But that's by the by. What the Chinese Expedition Army in Burma was supposed to do was to reinforce the beleaguered British. After Pearl Harbor, Japan declared war on the US and the UK as well, so now the Republic of China was formally fighting alongside all the Western allies against Imperial Japan, Fascist Italy, and Nazi Germany. And in Burma, which was then a part of British India, the Japanese had been able to put the squeeze on the British, so that the British badly needed relief. The Americans were at the time bogged down in the Pacific, having had to surrender in the Philippines in April 1942, leading to the infamous Bataan Death March. So the only ally in a position to assist the British was the Chinese. The same people whom, almost exactly 100 years earlier, the British had humiliated in the Opium War. In the end, due to some brilliant generalship, especially by the later very important General Sun Li Ren, the Chinese mission in Burma was a smashing success. They beat back the superior Japanese forces and relieved the British troops. And it didn't turn out to be a suicide mission. But this was still World War II China, so the expedition nonetheless cost tens of thousands of Chinese lives. But not Hao Bocun. He got back to China in 1943 and continued to alternately participate in battles and in training programs until victory over Japan in 1945. By 1946, he was a lieutenant colonel, and of course he fought in the Chinese Civil War against the communists, including in Manchuria in 1947. But when the Republican government fled the mainland for Taiwan in 1949, he didn't immediately go with it. Instead, he ended up in Hong Kong. This was actually very common at the time, although it's a detail that is often forgotten nowadays. In the chaos of the retreat from the mainland, of the millions who sought to follow the Republican government, many were unable to get onto the ships because there simply wasn't enough space. And many others were never able to get to the ports whence the ships were leaving because communist forces stood in the way. So, many went a different route, crossing the southern border into British-controlled Hong Kong. My own grandparents, my paternal grandparents this time, and my dad, as a baby, went to Hong Kong at this time. Former President Ma Ying-jeou was born in Hong Kong for this reason. The Jiu in his name refers to Kowloon, which in Mandarin is pronounced Jiu Long, Nine Dragons. Then, in 1950, again like my grandparents, Hao Bocun went from Hong Kong to Taiwan. He continued his military career and served as an aide to multiple chiefs of the General Staff, the equivalent of the U.S. Chairman of the Joint Chiefs. In 1955, he was promoted to full colonel, and in 1958, he was promoted again to major general and sent to Jingmen, or Kingmen, or Kuemoi, as it used to be called, the island right off the coast of mainland China that had remained in Republican control. But actually, that's not quite right. Jingmen is actually two islands, not one. There's a larger island, actually called Jingmen or Kingmen, and there's a smaller one called Lieyu or Xiao Jingmen, Little Jingmen. The second island, Little Jingmen, is actually closer to the mainland. Now, the Oscars just took place this week, and one of the nominees this year for documentary shorts called Island in Between, in which the filmmaker, whom I know, kindly gave me a thank you credit, is about Jingmen. I recorded this episode before the award ceremony, so as of this recording, I don't know who won. I don't know whether I should be saying Academy Award winning documentary Island in Between or merely Academy Award nominated documentary Island in Between. But either way, the film features some shots showing how close mainland China really is to Jingmen. But really, Those shots were taken from Little Jingmen, the smaller of the two islands and the closer one. Anyway, so Major General Hao Bocun was posted on Little Jingmen as the garrison commander, and it was 1958. If you know your Taiwan Strait history, you know what was about to happen. On August 23rd, 1958, the People's Liberation Army began to shell the two islands of Jingmen. Thus began months of war that came to be known to the Taiwanese as the Artillery War of 823, after the date when it began, and internationally as the Second Taiwan Strait Crisis. Within moments of the beginning of battle, a shell hit a jeep carrying all three lieutenant generals who were the deputy commanders of the Jingmen military area, killing two of them instantly. The third one died of his wounds the next day. The commander of Jingmen, General Hu Lian, was separately wounded and very nearly died. So this was truly a touch-and-go moment for the Republic of China. If Jingmen were to fall, the way would be open for a PLA invasion of Taiwan. Over in Washington, the Eisenhower administration considered dropping a nuclear bomb on China to stop the invasion. Of course, if they did that, then the USSR would get involved to assist Communist China, and that would be the start of World War III. But on Little Jingmen, Major General Hao Bocun kept his cool and kept his troops fighting. Until the ROC turned the situation around, survived the battle, and the Americans held off on that nuclear bomb. And so, World War III never began. Had Hao Bocun been a less capable officer? Had the PLA taken Little Jingmen? Who knows? Maybe the US would have dropped that nuke, and most of us today wouldn't be alive. But having forestalled Doomsday in 1958, the ROC under Chiang Kai-shek still wanted to retake mainland China. In 1962, Chiang Kai-shek was ready to go, and Hao Bocun was to be the first ROC general to go into battle. But the Kennedy administration emphasized to Chiang Kai-shek that it did not agree to the operation. Again, a reinvasion of mainland China could have touched off World War III. And without US support, an ROC attack on mainland China didn't stand a chance. So Chiang Kai-shek reluctantly called off the operation. And Hao Bocun was sent to the US to study at the US Army Command and General Staff College in Fort Leavenworth. After returning to Taiwan in 1964, he became deputy commander in Jingmen as a lieutenant general, and then in 1977, he was finally promoted to full general. And in 1978, he became commandant of the ROC Army, and in 1981, he became chief of the general staff, the top officer in all three branches of the military. This position carried a two-year term. But in Hao Bocun's case, each time his 2 years were up, the president asked him to stay and extended his term. And this was the 1980s now, as he held his post, a time of transition in Taiwan, as the government began to liberalize, began to prepare for a transition to democracy, officially lifting martial law in 1987. Zheng Nanrong, or Nai Long Cheng, as he was known in English, a critic of the government who later immolated himself, after martial law ended. At this time, wrote critical essays attacking Hao Bocun for staying chief of the military for too long. The criticism, the fear, was precisely that an officer long at the head of the military and enjoying the loyalty of the armed forces could become a strong man in the way of the junta in Burma or a number of Latin American countries, or for that matter, revolutionary France with Napoleon or Spain with Franco. The fear was not unfounded. And then, as I said, on January 13th, 1988, President Jiang Jingguo died. And like I said, in the years leading up to his death, Jiang Jingguo had begun to liberalize and tried to make his government more representative of the Taiwanese citizenry. One way he did this was to pick, in 1984, Li Denghui to be his vice president. Li Denghui was not a man that a majority of the ruling party, the KMT, trusted. He was a Benshengren, or local Taiwanese, not a mainlander who had come over from mainland China in 1949 or 1950. He had grown up under the Japanese colonial administration and spoke Japanese as a young man and went by a Japanese name. The very Japanese that men like Hao Bocun had fought during the Second World War. Many in the KMT felt that Li Denghui sympathized with the opposition to the point of basically being one of them. Now that President Jiang Jingguo had died in office, legally, constitutionally, Vice President Li Denghui would succeed to the presidency. But given the widespread discontent within the KMT toward Li Denghui, given that he would now succeed not because of any particular support, but because the previous president died, would the other KMT leaders accept his presidency? Would the military accept his presidency? Or might Hao Bocun do exactly what critics of his suggested he might and launch a Bonapartist coup, something that he could do given his prestige within the military, something that many within the KMT might even support? Looking back on it over 30 years later, we know that Taiwan continued on its path toward democracy. But on January 13th, 1988, that future was far from certain. The fate of Taiwan hung in the balance. Even though I didn't know that at the time, I was a little kid and had no idea what was happening in the halls of power. Everything might change depending on which way thoughts turned in Hao Bocun's mind. What Hao Bocun did then was to go on TV to make a statement. All three branches of the military, he declared, were in the service of the Constitution. The Constitution decreed that the vice president became president in the event of the president's death. So now, Li Denghui was president. And the armed forces would be loyal to the constitutionally legitimate president. Li Denghui would go on to be remembered as the man who completed the democratic transition that Jiang Jingguo began. Although within the KMT, feelings toward Li Denghui remain complicated. As he worked in service of democracy, yes, but also against the interests of his own political party. What is rarely remembered, though, is that Li Denghui never would have gotten a chance to do what he went on to do had Hao Bocun made a different decision in January 1988. Democracy has many parents. Not all of them are remembered as such. Democracy requires the goodwill of many individuals to maintain. In the case of Taiwanese democracy, Hao Bocun deserves to be remembered as a man who chose constitutionality over his own ambition. A man whose self-restraint, whose strength of character, in a critical moment, helped to make Taiwanese democracy possible. The same way that George Washington remains celebrated for surrendering his sword to the Continental Congress. After that critical moment in 1988, Hao Bocun set aside his army uniform and became a civilian official. Li Denghui clearly felt, at the time, that he could trust him. He made Hao Bocun the defense minister in 1989, then the prime minister in 1990. There was again a wave of protests by the opposition Democratic Progressive Party, or DPP, today the ruling party in Taiwan. A soldier should not become the prime minister, they said as they launched a mass demonstration. The KMT argued in response that Eisenhower was also a general, and no one thought it was improper for him to become president. In his memoirs, Li Denghui later wrote that Hao Bocun was a man who wanted to do things for his country. And in the end, Hao Bocun served as prime minister for nearly 3 years. During his tenure, after having corralled the military into supporting the constitution in 1988, Hao Bocun controversially sometimes chaired meetings with the military chiefs. This was controversial because, although the prime minister ran much of day-to-day government business, the president was the commander-in-chief of the armed forces. So once again, he came under attack by critics, although he always insisted that he did nothing wrong. Finally, despite the previous trust he showed in Hao Bocun, by late 1992, Li Denghui wanted him out. After some further conflict between president and prime minister, Hao Bocun finally left office as prime minister in early 1993. He later left the KMT, and in 1996, during the first direct presidential election, Hao Bocun ran for vice president as an independent. His team came in third in a four-way race. In retirement, as an old soldier from the mainland, fiercely opposed to Taiwanese independence, he visited mainland China many times, particularly visiting the old battlefields of World War II. Some in Taiwan, particularly the DPP, often criticized him for visiting the mainland. In some cases, even accusing him of treason for doing so. But during these history-oriented visits, Hao Bocun often publicly emphasized how false the Chinese Communist Party's version of history really is. The CCP, even today, casts itself as the leader of China during World War II, ignoring the basic fact that at the time, the CCP was not the government, but only a guerrilla organization based in one section of the country. The government was run by the KMT, led by Chiang Kai-shek. Hao Bocun certainly knew this. He was there. During a 2014 visit marking the Marco Polo Bridge incident that began the war, Hao Bocun publicly berated his CCP hosts for failing to acknowledge that it was chiefly Chiang Kai-shek's KMT that led China through World War II. In 2015, the CCP tried to invite Hao Bocun and a number of other ROC generals to attend a military parade in Beijing, marking the end of World War II. Hao Bocun refused to go and called on all retired ROC officers to boycott the event. I also learned recently that, despite their diametrically opposed politics, Hao Bocun became sort of friends with Shi Mingde, the pro-Taiwanese independence activist who was one of the founders of the DPP, who spent 26 years in political prison and was sometimes called Taiwan's Nelson Mandela. In 2014, the two of them nearly co-signed a proposal to resolve cross-strait issues by forming a federal structure that would include both the PRC on the mainland and the ROC on Taiwan as autonomous entities, the way Germany and France are both in the EU. After Hao Bocun died in 2020, aged 100, Shi Mingde eulogized him as a true anti-communist hero and a true general of the Republic of China, a man who kept Taiwan safe from invasion for many years. Well, Shi Mingde has now also died on January 15th of this year, 2 days after the election and on his own 83rd birthday. So time passes. Or as they used to say in Latin, sic transit gloria mundi. And we probably won't see the likes of these grand personalities like Hao Bocun and Shi Mingde in Taiwanese politics ever again. This has been MODG. Thank you for listening.